After 16 years in the New Hampshire legislature, our guest today, former House Speaker and current House Minority Leader Terry Norelli, has seen political shifts come and go. But the past legislative session may have been Norelli's toughest. After the 2010 election, she not only had to give up the Speaker's gavel, but also faced an unprecedented GOP supermajority. And so in that context, Norelli, as leader of House Democrats, had to find a way to be heard, despite a 3-1 margin not in her favor. There were a few victories for Democrats. Enough Republicans joined them to defeat a gay marriage repeal, a right-to-work bill, and a constitutional amendment on education funding. On many other issues, however, Norelli and her team could only sit back and watch, especially on the state budget, which Democrats called reckless. Now, though, Representative Norelli is aggressively trying to reverse her party's fortunes. Since the session ended, she's spoken out frequently on what she calls the radical Tea Party agenda of her Republican colleagues. But the GOP's response is also being heard. Republicans are reminding voters of tax and spending increases that happened under Democratic control and are confident they have plenty of accomplishments to run on, including balanced budgets, reduced regulations, and lower taxes. Today in the exchange, House Minority Leader Terry Norelli is here after we sat down with Republican House Speaker Bill O'Brien yesterday. Let's hear from you this hour. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And Representative Norelli, welcome back to the exchange.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how would you assess this last session relative, Representative Norelli, to your overall 16 years at the State House?
I think in your lead up, you hit on the challenges during this time. Certainly in my first 10 years in the legislature, we were in the minority. The Democrats had been in the minority for most of the century. But they were always a minority where you were able to work across the aisle, Democrats working with Republicans, Republicans working with Democrats, and things would get done. And whether it was when the Democrats were in the majority, or the Republicans in the majority, I think there was always a sense of collegiality. I think there was a sense of bipartisanship, even though there are certainly issues that tend to be more partisan. It was done in a way that was respectful, that was thoughtful, where there was deliberation and debate. And I think a lot of that, unfortunately, was missing in this session. So, yes, in a lot of ways, it has been the most challenging session for me.
You know, we'll talk about the issues for sure most of this hour. But since you brought up the tone, I'm wondering what you think of this, Representative Norelli. People say nationally, it's kind of the same thing. You know, it's more us versus them. You know, if you disagree with me, you're a bad guy or gal. So it seems to me that we're getting some of this tone everywhere, not just here in New Hampshire.
I think that's true. And I meet, obviously, with colleagues across the country and other state legislatures, and it does vary state legislature to state legislature. Some, even among Republican-controlled legislatures, some Republicans are upset with the tone, and in other states it seems to be okay. But I certainly look forward to getting back to a good working relationship with good, positive, thorough debate on all of the issues, because they're important to the people of New Hampshire.
Well, and in 2010, President Obama famously said he received a shellacking from voters when Republicans won big nationwide. And you know as well as I do here in New Hampshire, the changeover from Democrat to Republican was dramatic. What are you doing, Representative Norelli, to make sure you don't get shellacked again?
Well, I think one of the unfortunate things about the last election, which we aren't going to be able to change this time, is the amount of undisclosed and out-of-state money that was poured into our state elections. If you look at just the top of the ticket, money that was spent against Governor Lynch, against our Senate candidate, and against our congressional candidates, over $10 million of national Republican-leaning money that was spent in the state of New Hampshire. That's a huge amount of influence here in our state. And unfortunately, I think in 2010, there was not the matching national Democratic money coming into the state. We aren't able to change the laws to affect that money will continue to come. But I suspect that this time the national Democratic money will come. And we're working with our candidates to try to be smarter about campaigning and to work hard in other ways to get out the message about the differences between the values that drive the Democrats that are serving now and those that are driving the Republicans.
And again, the purpose of my conversation with you today isn't to revisit 2010, but one more question on that before we move into the legislature and then to the 2012 elections. You know, you're talking about money and various campaign strategies. What about the message, though? I mean, Republicans made a strong message saying that Democrats spent too much, borrowed too much, did fuzzy math to get the budget into balance, spent time on frivolous legislation instead of focusing on jobs and the economy. And that message seems to have resonated with voters.
Unfortunately, it has. And unfortunately, I don't think it's true. When you talk about the budget and the numbers for the budget, the Republicans like to say that, you know, Democrats spent us into a hole. They are comparing the numbers for the budgets, not the actual dollars spent. And there were some pretty significant changes. I won't go into them, but there are things that do or don't get included in a budget that money that may be included that isn't spent or isn't included because you aren't sure whether you're going to spend it, that is spent. So the real apples to apples comparison when you look and say, okay, how did each legislature do, is what are the actual dollars spent in the budget? And if you look at the budgets and compare actual dollars spent, then Democratic budget was in line with, or in most cases, less than the increases of the Republican legislatures. So one thing is to correct that misinformation about the budget. And I would argue that the kinds of things that Democrats worked on when we were in the majority were things like making sure that every child in the state of New Hampshire finally has access to public kindergarten. We worked on things like raising the dropout age, which had a tremendously positive impact on improving our graduation rates. So I think that many of the things that we worked on are things that the public supports.
Yesterday, House Speaker Bill O'Brien was here, and I'm sure you listened to that conversation that we had with the House Speaker. And in terms of the deficit, he said it wasn't a typical New Hampshire deficit where halfway through the session or towards the end of the session, you say, oops, revenues haven't quite been what we expected, so we need to make some cuts down the line. He said from day one, it was $800 million too much. And that was unprecedented for New Hampshire, that there was too much money committed given the relative revenues that typically come in.
Well, I want to start out by saying that the last Democratic budget year, which was ended just a year ago, had a $17 million surplus. So there was no actual deficit. New Hampshire has what's called a structural deficit, meaning that the taxes and fees that we use don't fluctuate. They don't have elasticity to them. So if nothing changes, obviously, there's inflation. There may be other population increases or changes in the economy that require a higher cost to provide the same services, but the tax base doesn't change the same way. And so every single budget cycle, there is a brand new look at how do we decide what are the most important programs to fund at the state level and match it up with the dollars that we have or don't have and figure out what to do. It is true that in the last cycle, we took a chunk of federal stimulus dollars. And there were those at the time that didn't think that we should have. There were two big chunks, and I would argue that we should have taken them both, and we did. One was enhanced federal matching for Medicaid. And since the numbers of people who were in need of services based on the economy and job loss and everything went up significantly, those federal dollars actually helped us to be able to provide services to some of our most vulnerable citizens in this state. Those services are now on the decline as the economy gets better, so we no longer need them. The other big chunk of money that we took was stimulus dollars for highways. And again, I would argue that it was very important not just to improve our infrastructure, but also to use that money and those projects to increase and maintain jobs in our state. I live in Portsmouth, which had, until it no longer existed, the number one red-listed bridge in the state, the Memorial Bridge. That bridge would not be replaced at this point if we didn't have federal stimulus dollars. All the work that you see going on out there now are projects that have been in the pipeline that are because New Hampshire took federal stimulus dollars and helped to keep those high-paying jobs.
Go ahead. You want to finish
that? I think those are the kinds of things that changed. And so what they are looking at is an ever-ongoing structural deficit, not an actual deficit. Again, we ended the year with a $17 million surplus.
You know, speaking as a journalist, I have to say these budget comparisons and deficit comparisons and how much spending went up and whether general fund spending is the same as overall spending and which pocket the money comes out of, it's very frustrating and difficult for reporters to tease this out, because you hear one line from one side and one line from the other side. They spent like drunken sailors. No, actually, we had a surplus.
And, you know, they say you can lie with statistics. I think that it is important for people to understand the differences. But if I could use a personal example, if I set up a budget for myself, but I didn't really put in the budget that I was going to stop at the coffee shop every day and spend $5 on a coffee, you can see that the amount of that I budgeted and what I actually spent at the end of the year would be very different. In their case, they didn't include the $5 daily coffee shop stop. And in the Democrats' case, we did.
We'll take some of your calls after a short break. We're sitting down again with Democratic leader of the New Hampshire House, Terry Norelli. Your questions and comments are welcome. 1-800-892-6477.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And no doubt you've heard NHPR's summer raffle is underway. We're looking for a few volunteers to help us answer phones. If you'd like to support the station and have a couple of hours to donate, you can sign up for a shift at NHPR.org. And thanks. More with New Hampshire House Minority Leader Terry Norelli on The Exchange on NHPR and a 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, law enforcement's growing reliance on cell phone data. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. And from Gough Wilson, a global immigration law firm helping businesses and individuals achieve successful immigration solutions, online at goughwilson.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking with House Minority Leader Terry Norelli, a Democratic state representative from Portsmouth. We're looking back at the legislative year and ahead to the fall elections after we had a similar discussion with House Speaker Bill O'Brien yesterday. We invite you to join us. How do you think the Democrats did over this past legislative year? What do you think of some of the themes that they're talking about as the fall elections approach? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org is the address. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. I want to ask you about a theme that I've heard from Democrats already, even though the November elections are a ways away. Republicans made it easier to smoke and harder to afford college. And let's take the smoking first, Representative Norelli. Yesterday, Speaker O'Brien said, hey, there had been 5 cigarette tax increases in 6 years. Border stores were starting to panic. He also said that for every dollar outsiders spend at a convenience store on cigarettes, they spend $8 on other stuff. I wonder, could there be an economic benefit of this cigarette tax lowering?
Well, that certainly was the argument that the Republican majority made. We actually tested that not too many years ago when the Democrats were in the majority. And the argument was made that if we lower the cigarette tax, it'll actually increase consumption. And so we tried it out with a time limit on it. And lo and behold, it didn't come to pass. We lost revenues. Fortunately, we tried it for a shorter period of time. Because this time around, they lowered the cigarette tax 10 cents. And in fact, our cigarette tax revenues this year are 20 million below last year. They are 12 million below even what the majority anticipated that they would be. And I'd say that's a pretty strong message that it didn't have the impact that they thought it would have. And that's because the wholesale cigarette companies, they actually have a lot of flexibility in what they do. And it's actually more typical that when states increase cigarette taxes significantly, the wholesalers generally lower the cigarette wholesale price somewhat to partially offset that.
This year they raised it.
This
though,
year
right?
they raised it.
Across
in fact,
the
there were a number of, well, there are things that they do across the country, and then there are also things that they do locally in various states to respond to state tax changes. And here in New Hampshire, you know, a number of the newspapers went out and checked at the border convenience stores, and lo and behold, the cigarette prices did not come down. And here we are with $12 million hole, $20 million less than last year, money we certainly could have used. This doesn't sunset for another year.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Remind us how, because some Republican state senators had concerns over lowering this tax, but they agreed to go along with it if this sunset provision were put in. So just remind us what
and
that's
so
the, about.
And so this goes sunsets in one more year if, in fact, the revenues don't match up. But that means for another year we stand to lose another $20 million of very much needed revenues in our state. And if you consider what we've already lost, just in order to make up for what we lost, not for the increases that we're expecting next year, but to make up for the loss last year, 7 million more packs of cigarettes would need to be sold in the next year than the increase they were already planning. I think that sort of puts it in perspective. I think from a public policy standpoint, this is also really not good public health policy. I mean, do we really want to encourage people to go out and smoke more and then have more public health issues and more health care costs, some of which are borne by the state? You know, I would argue that we shouldn't.
Well, given the increase in price by the companies, if you did bring back that 10-cent tax that the Republicans got rid of, would you hurt your competitive advantage even more? I mean, now cigarettes are even more expensive.
Generally, what happens when states raise cigarette taxes is twofold. One is there is a reduction in smoking. That's a good benefit of raising cigarette taxes, although it generally has to be a 10% increase in the cost of the cigarettes to have a significant impact on consumption. And again, if we were to put that increase back, the wholesale companies would make whatever changes they make. But it's all comparative. How do we compare to the tax of the states around us? And in Canada, in Vermont, in Maine, and in Massachusetts, their cigarette taxes are already and always have been significantly higher than ours. So it does create cross-border sales.
Our number again here on the exchange for you to join us with our guest, Terry Norelli, Democratic leader of the New Hampshire House, is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. We sat down with Republican House Speaker Bill O'Brien yesterday, looking back at the past legislative session and ahead to some of the themes from that session in this fall's elections. How do you feel about the past legislative 2 years, that 2 year session, and the role Democrats played in that minority? What are your thoughts about some of the issues that you hope come up in the elections this fall? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Norelli, before we go to our listeners, so I want to ask you about the second half of that question. Again, Democrats have said Republicans made it easier to smoke and harder to go to college. Here's my question, though, and we've heard a lot about this big cut to the university system, $45 million, I think, almost a 50% cut. Yeah. If Democrats strongly object to this, though, what revenue source would you seek to restore it? Because $45 million is a lot of money. So it's not enough to say it's bad that they did this. How would you find the money not to do that?
Well, one of the things about the budget, sorry to go back to the budget, but there are budget issues that have impacted this. And of course, that was a budget decision itself. I think a lot of the decisions that were made are what my parents would have called penny wise and pound foolish, because they are things that saved a little bit of money now, but would have a big cost later, or that saved a little bit of money at the state level and increased costs significantly at the local level, or decisions that will be harmful to our economy. So let me give you a couple of examples. Looking for money, let's say, there were significant cuts to personnel at the Department of Revenue Administration, including the loss of several auditors. Now, the auditors look at business tax returns and audit them, and we have lost a number of auditors through the budget process. The result has been that audit revenues this year are more than $20 million below what they were last year. That's just for 1 year. Double that, there's the $45 million for the university system. I think that's a decision that's penny wise and pound foolish. I think if you look at decisions such as the significant cuts to mental health, here's an area where it makes so much more sense to provide services at the community level that are cost effective for those folks who are struggling with mental health issues. When you cut those services, what you find is that these same people get to a crisis stage. And in fact, we're hearing stories that EMTs are making a lot more crisis calls to those with mental health and substance abuse issues. And where are they taking them? To the ER and to the county jails. Those are much higher cost services for people with mental health. And it's also obviously a safety issue. So again, there are a lot of decisions that are meaning our costs will be higher or are higher, or we are shorting out revenues that we would have already received. We talked about two of them, $20 million so far in 1 year for the cigarette tax, and at least $20 million so far in 1 year from the loss of the auditors and the audit revenue.
So those aren't necessarily cuts that you would have made elsewhere to make up for the $45 million for the university system, but approaches you would take.
Right. We wouldn't have cut the auditors, which means that we would have had the $20 million in revenue. We would not have cut the cigarette tax and experienced the loss in revenues that we had. So those revenues, there would have been more revenues available. And I think you have to look at the whole picture when you're doing the budget and not look at it from I think an ideological viewpoint. You know, to say we have to cut the budget, and that is the bottom line. We just have to cut the budget. that's actually pretty easy to do if you don't care where you're making the cuts. But if you want to balance it, you still want to provide the services that you need, you have to make much smarter decisions about how you do it.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Over the past legislative session, what issues were you concerned about? Were you satisfied with the session? Were you disappointed? Do you think Democrats could have fought harder or louder? Or do you think that they did the best they could, given that they were outnumbered by 3-1? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Speaker Norelli, a couple more questions on what you just said. But excuse me, former House Speaker Terry Norelli, a couple more questions, but let's go to the phones if we could first. And Roger's waiting in Manchester. Go ahead, Roger. You're on the air.
Thank you. Several things have bothered me about the Republican legislature, and I don't think Democrats could have done any better because they were outnumbered 3-1. So as far as that goes, I think that we need more revenue through taxation. That's one thing, because I think we have so many needs in the state that need to be met, and in order to do that, you need revenue. So I don't know how you would do it, but I think we need more revenue for one thing. Secondly, I think the Republican legislature went backwards, like for female reproductive rights and stuff like that. You notice that our state had the lowest teenage pregnancy in the country, and then since 1999, we had that law helping kids to get, prevention from getting pregnant, and I think that's helped a lot. And the worst thing for me is voter suppression and not taking care of that.
Voter ID, is that what you're talking about, Roger?
I think that's voter suppression, and I think that's terrible.
Well, Roger, let's take the what you called reproductive rights, because Terry Norelli, I know that's been a huge, huge issue for you. You and other Democrats have said, nationwide, not just here in New Hampshire, have said Republicans are waging a war on women. Pretty strong language. What are Democrats trying to say there?
Well, I think it's strong but accurate language, unfortunately.
A war on women.
A war on women. I think if you look at the number of bills that have been not only introduced but pushed forward by the Republican majority, in some cases by the Speaker himself, it really are bills that could harm women tremendously. One of his priorities was to try to defund Planned Parenthood. His ideology is that he's opposed to abortion, and I appreciate that. I'm not in the same place. I think women should have the right to make their own reproductive health care choices in consultation with their own doctor without a lawmaker in the doctor's office with them. But that being said, there was a push to defund Planned Parenthood. They keep their money separate for the very small percentage of healthcare services that they provide, which are abortion related. But defunding Planned Parenthood would have denied access to about 16,000 women in this state for very essential preventive health care, things like cancer screenings, for instance. And in many of our rural areas, Planned Parenthood is the place that women go for their health care. In general, not just their reproductive health care. So things like cancer screenings, I think that would have been very detrimental for women. I think one of the most significant preventive services for women is to have good family planning. When women don't have family planning, birth issues are increased. Women's health is decreased. And so it's really important for women to have access to good family planning. And there was a push to actually allow employers to decide for women whether or not they were going to have access to contraception. Now, some people would say, no, it's not whether they would have access, just whether the insurance would pay for it. But birth control is very expensive. And for many women, particularly low-income women, without the financial assistance, they would not have access. So these are just two examples, of course. There are a number of anti-choice bills, bills to limit a woman's access to the full range of reproductive health care. There was a bill that actually passed the House that would have required that physicians actually provide misleading and inaccurate information to their patients or face a felony charge.
That bill didn't go anywhere, though.
It did pass the House.
Got killed by the Senate.
It did get killed by the Senate, fortunately, but there was enough support in the House for that to actually pass. I find that frightening myself. I can't imagine that there's any other instance where lawmakers would actually be requiring that physicians provide inaccurate information to their patients. Quite frankly, with one or two exceptions, none of the lawmakers in New Hampshire have ever gone to medical school. So I think we ought to be providing frameworks and letting the medical community make the medical decisions. So I think that's really dangerous for women.
You know, this issue of abortion, as you know, because you've worked on this for so long, is deeply personal. You know, people have different ideas about it from a spiritual standpoint, a religious standpoint, especially when it comes to young women, and they see it, even people who would call themselves supporters of abortion rights, sometimes see this as a parental control issue. And it's interesting, Representative Norelli, we talked earlier in the program about this sort of heated up rhetoric and us versus them. Is defining differences of opinion on abortion, is that worthy of using war on women?
Well, I think when it
puts... If we're worried about inflammatory language and stuff.
No, and I certainly appreciate your comment in that regard, because I do think that there has been a lot of rhetoric, a lot of unnecessary rhetoric. But I think it's quite dangerous and frightening when we are actually promoting policies that put women's lives at risk. And when you are talking about women who will not have access to preventive health care services like family planning, like cancer screening, and other very important and life-saving preventive services, you're putting women's lives at risk. And actually, I do think that's pretty dangerous. If there's any place that deserves the kind of alarm bells going off, this would definitely be one of them, my opinion.
Just remind us, we did see this year, although that other abortion bill did not pass, we did see a return of the parental notification law. That's on the books now in New Hampshire.
That's true.
And that was a big shift from what Democrats had wanted when they were in control.
Yes, this is true. And unfortunately, you know, it passed. Fortunately, we were able to prevent the defunding of Planned Parenthood. We were able to prevent restriction of access to contraception. We were able to prevent having doctors give misinformation to their patients. So, you know, we did have some successes in this regard.
More of your calls after a short break. The number here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Antioch University, New England in Keene, offering 7 different master's and doctoral programs in environmental studies, antiochne.edu. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for a healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Past early bird winners of NHPR's summer car raffle did pretty well, with $2,000 worth of gas gift cards from Irving Oil.
My son and daughter-in-law, they easily got a couple of months out of their cars, and ours lasted 4 months.
I was able to use that gas card from July through the middle of November.
For 11 months, we have not paid for gas.
How far would they take you? One way to find out is to get your $50 raffle tickets at nhpr.org by August 4th.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Terry Norelli is here, Democratic leader of the House, a longtime state representative from Portsmouth. We're looking back at the legislative year and ahead toward the fall elections. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477. How do you feel about the past legislative year, the role Democrats played in an extreme minority? Also, your thoughts on some of the issues that you hope are brought to the forefront this fall. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Representative Norelli, we've talked a lot about what you feel Republicans have done wrong in this past legislative session. But what about Democrats and your plans if you regain control? We're going to find the money for all the things you hope to do, whether it's mental health or the university system or all the other, you know, services and programs that you're concerned about.
Well, I think there's a very different approach to the way we would look at many of those issues. For instance, I think if you think about the Republican approach to jobs in the economy, where their goal was cut the budget and eliminate they would say they would like to eliminate every regulation. And that's their world for increasing jobs and spurring the economy. I think if you consider the way the Democrats approached that, we did things like reinstituted job training. We passed the governor's initiative, New Hampshire Working, to allow businesses to keep their experienced employees and to train new ones. The Democrats actually passed, after having failed in the prior Republican legislature, the Research and Development Tax Credit. We put in money for tourism promotion in our budget. And when you put in money, this is a state with a big tourism industry. We put money in for tourism promotion, which helps all of the industry as well as other local businesses, and consequently also means more dollars, revenue dollars, into our state coffers. We passed the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which actually brought a recent study said that it brought $17 million into our economy and created 458 jobs. So this is the way that we would approach jobs, creating jobs, spurring our economy. And if you look at one of the other things that I think people don't realize, I mentioned before about our taxes and how they aren't elastic. And even in those states where they are, obviously, there were big revenue drops. The general fund revenues in New Hampshire in 2011 were the same level as those in 2004. So we were trying to do a budget in 2011 with $2,004 dollars. And so if you put in some of these, continue to look at ways to spur the economy, to create jobs, to improve things, the revenues also will naturally recover, although, most of the economic reports indicate that it'll be on the slow side.
It's
the recovery will be
supposed to be
on the slow side,
limping along. So if you're talking about different approaches, different choices to boost jobs in the economy, Speaker O'Brien noted yesterday that, hey, unemployment went down by 0.8% over the time Republicans were in control here in New Hampshire. 0.8% is a lot.
Well, when we were headed into the 2010 election, the economists around the country were pointing at New Hampshire as a model. They said we were leading the nation in the economic recovery. And in fact, for those years, New Hampshire was 40% below the national average for unemployment. So we were doing exceptionally well relative to the rest of the country. Now, for those out there that are saying, but there are a lot of people without jobs, that is true, and I don't want to minimize that. But relative to the rest of the country, we were doing extremely well. If you look at where we are now, yes, our unemployment has had a little bit of uptick, although the Nashua Telegraph PolitiFact said that they took the Republicans are taking too much credit for that. But nevertheless, there's been a little bit of an uptick. But
I mean, a downtick in unemployment,
an uptick in job creation. But now if we're looking at job creation, we're actually below the national average on job creation.
Although we had less further to go because we were doing better than others to begin with.
Yes, that's true. But whether you look at it as sheer numbers or percentages, we're still below the national average on job creation.
Our number here on the exchange again is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. One more question, Representative Norelli, before we go to our callers again. You talked about revenues, and our earlier caller said he thought New Hampshire had a revenue problem. This is going to be an issue in this election year. We've got on the Democratic side a couple gubernatorial candidates, one of whom has taken the pledge, Maggie Hassan. We're going to talk with her tomorrow, the pledge against broad-based taxes. And the other two who have said, no, we need to have a more open dialogue about this, even though they say they have no immediate plans, obviously, to raise taxes. What about that? That tends to be a bugaboo for Democrats as they go around saying, we want to do this, we want to do this, we want to do this. Some people say, you're going to have to raise taxes to do that. How are Democrats going to talk about this pledge and whether New Hampshire has a revenue problem this
year?
Well,
the one thing I would note is that every time it comes up to an election, Republicans say Democrats are going to pass an income tax. And we had 10 years of Democratic, 12 years of Democratic governors and no income tax. And I believe that we should never cut off dialogue about anything. Everyone has good ideas, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or undeclared, whether they're somebody in their home that's just trying to make ends meet, or they're the head of a Fortune 500 company. I think all ideas should come to the table and they should be discussed, analyzed, data brought forward, debated. That makes for good public policy in our state, and I would always encourage that. That being said, I think that New Hampshire has a long tradition of being a state that does not want to have a broad... We do have an income tax. We do have a sales tax. They're just not broad-based.
Business income, for example, interest and dividends taxes.
We have rooms and meals and car rental sales taxes.
Oh, I know. Every time I go out to eat, I'm very
right.
well aware
that's
of the
right.
sales tax.
So we do have, I don't want to misspeak and say there are no income or sales tax. We have them. They're just not broad-based. The people of New Hampshire have, the voters have not been in that place where they're ready for or they want an income tax or a sales tax. That being said, I think we should continue to have this discussion about this and every other issue.
Let's take another call. And this is Sean in Alton. Hi, Sean. You're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Morning.
And the same to you, former speaker.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to, I was listening to the discussion on the economy and jobs and just brought up a couple of things that I was thinking about. One is I'm employed out of state, and I think there's a lot of people in that situation here, but I choose to live here for one reason. One reason is due to the tax structure. And I think our tax structure invites a lot of people who are maybe in sales or other professions where we're taxed where we live, even though we may be employed out of state. So I just wanted to mention that. And I don't want to see the tax structure change.
Yeah. So given that, and I'm glad you called, Sean. So given that you like New Hampshire's very low tax structure, feeling like it helps the state and bring in residents like you, how do you feel about spending them on the spending side? If you like the current tax structure, how do you feel about some of the complaints that Democrats have made that Republicans cut education too deeply, mental health too deeply, and so forth?
Well, I don't think the Republicans did, and I think our spending is just fine. In reference to the caller who said we have a revenue problem, I don't believe we have a revenue problem. I think, and I think that's one of the reasons the Republicans came into power in 2010 is that there's a feeling, and I think I'm probably the average, mid-40s individual in the state of New Hampshire where I'm probably leaning a little libertarian. I'm socially, moderate but fiscally conservative, and I think there's a lot of New Hampshire people in that.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Sean. What do you think about this? He's happy with the way it is. We also got a call yesterday when Speaker O'Brien was on saying, thank you for holding the line on spending, Speaker O'Brien.
Well, First, I would have liked to have found out from Sean whether he's paying an income tax in the state that he's working in. The answer is likely yes, because all the other states around us do have an income tax. I think for some people, they think that one tax is more fair than another. For other people, they think they want to look at whether a tax is elastic or not. If you consider, for instance, that we fund our highways with a gas tax that is a flat amount, it does not fluctuate unless we actually go in and raise the amount per gallon. And so we're operating on our highways with about the same dollars that we had back in the early 90s. So you can't forever fix more and more highway miles with more and more expensive materials with the same dollars. And again, I think this is a discussion that, you know, we need to continue to have. I think that the one tax that most people feel is exorbitant here in New Hampshire, in many communities, is the property tax. And in fact, we have among the highest property taxes in the country.
Overall, one of the lowest tax burdens.
I was going to say, we have among the lowest in overall tax burdens and among the highest in property taxes. So the next question then is, how does this impact, you know, if you're a low-income person and you're paying 8% of your income on taxes in this state, and you're at the top 10% and you're paying only 2% of your income in this state? You know, those are the kinds of discussions that I think people are looking to have. And the decision that we make ultimately, you know, I believe for a long time will be not to have an income tax, because that's what the public wants. But nevertheless, I think we should continue to have the conversations about what the trade-offs and advantages are of the entire package, we raise the money and what we spend it on.
Do Democrats have a chance of attracting voters like Sean, who says, you know, I like holding the line on the spending. Yes, I'm socially moderate, fiscally conservative. Can Democrats even hope to attract those voters, or are they going to automatically go to Republicans because Republicans are seen as holding the line on spending and taxes, in fact, reducing taxes?
Well, first of all, I would say that there are a lot of Democrats who are socially liberal and fiscally conservative. And second of all, I would say, while the perception that you just described is that we have not held the line, again, I would say, look at the actual dollars spent biennium to biennium over the last couple of decades, and the facts are there. Democrats held the line.
I have to ask you one more question, and it's not about the Republicans. Much of our conversation, again, this hour has talked about what they did versus what you would do if Democrats get back into power. What about Governor Lynch, though, Representative Norelli? How would you assess his role over the past session?
Well, I certainly think that Governor Lynch represents the kind of person that Sean would have voted for. You know, someone who is very deliberate about the actions that he takes and the policy positions that he takes. He has been fiscally conservative. In some instances, he has been what might be considered socially liberal. He is the only governor in the country that ever signed a marriage equality law. Thank you, Governor Lynch. And so, you know, I certainly think that he represents you know, many in the Democratic Party, and I, for one, have been very grateful that he's been there the last 8 years.
Did you in the House wish that you'd gotten a little bit more of a helping hand from the governor on some of these issues? He has, you know, a fair bit of sway, and he stayed mum a lot on many of the key issues before the legislature this year.
Well, I think there were some key ones where he came out and where his voice really made a difference. Very strongly with the police and law enforcement in the state against well, against the Stand Your Ground law, also against the law that would have prohibited bans of weapons on college campuses and at the Verizon Center, the legislation that was also passed in the House that would have allowed loaded guns and crossbows in cars and no permits. So there were a number of, stronger or gun legislation that would have allowed more proliferation of guns out there, where the governor was very vocal. And fortunately, while they did pass the House, all but the Stand Your Ground law were stopped in the Senate.
You know, it'd be nice to get Governor Lynch's assessment of this past session. We here on The Exchange have been trying to get him in our studios for at least the past 18 months. He has resisted repeated persistent attempts by our producers, so I'd love to ask him those questions myself. I'm sorry I had to ask them to you, but we have been unable for some reason to get Governor Lynch back here in our studio.
And I just want to be clear, obviously I'm not speaking for the governor, only about my impressions of
right.
the governor.
And we would love to speak to the governor ourselves, you can believe me. You know, Representative Norelli, Republicans, I've talked to a lot of them over the last couple months, especially as the session has wrapped up to a dramatic close, and they're feeling pretty confident, pretty good that they can hold on to the House. They, I think, might expect to lose a couple members. That always happens when you've been in the majority for 2 years, but feeling pretty confident that they can hold on to it. How confident are you feeling that you might be able to flip it?
Well, I think that in all honesty, it's a big flip. So while it's possible, I'm not assuming it's likely, though we're going to work awful hard for it. I do assume that we will pick up a significant number of seats, and that will mean that we'll have no longer a supermajority on the majority side. And I think that'll be a good thing.
Do you have candidates? I know it's early, but do you have candidates for every single one of these House seats? I know sometimes these seats go unchallenged.
No, that is true. We don't, but we have the Republicans have a lot more open seats where they have not filed candidates than the Democrats do. They also have a whole lot more primaries than we do.
Okay. Well, Representative Norelli, thank you for taking the time to come and talk to us today.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
That's Terry Norelli. Again, she's the former House Speaker, and she's a longtime Democratic state representative from Portsmouth. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our interns are Claudia Camarino and Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about upcoming shows, get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at NHPR.com.